Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Brain fog, insomnia, moodiness, achy joints, weight gain. Maybe you're thinking they're all just part of getting older. Or that's what your doctor tells you. But Midi Health understands that for women over 40, they can all be connected. Hormonal changes that happen during perimenopause and menopause are at the root of dozens of symptoms women experience, not just hot flashes. Midi specializes in compassionate care for women in menopause. Their solutions are safe, effective, and FDA approved. Plus, they're covered by insurance. A convenient telehealth visit with a MIDI clinician can be your first step to getting personalized care. They'll tailor a treatment plan for your symptoms and health history so you can get back to feeling great. 91% of MIDI patients get relief from symptoms within just 2 months. When your body changes, your care should too. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
The Planet Fitness Black Card is packed with perks, not like other gyms.
Hi, can I bring a friend to work out? Okay. Is my membership good at other locations? Okay. Do you have any other amenities?
But at Planet Fitness, the PF Black Card gets you tons of perks. Bring a friend for free anytime. Access to any of our 2,500 plus locations. Relax in the hydro massage and so much more. Join for just $1 down, $24.99 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends March 15th. See Home Club for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 195 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have 3 days until opening day. Mr. Clegg, my 80 grade co-host, how excited are you, sir?
Pretty excited. It's almost here. Everything we've worked for and talked about all offseason finally come into fruition. So looking forward to seeing the fruits of our labor and hopefully helping people win, but also seeing our own teams do well too. So I'm very, very excited.
Yes, it's. I only have one more draft. I have a home league draft. Well, when you're listening to this, I would have had it last night. I have it on Sunday night, recording Sunday afternoon right now. So, and that's it for me. All my drafts are in the books, and you know, now we change over to lineup changes and fab and trades and all that fun stuff. You know, obviously in dynasty leagues, we've been making trades all offseason, but it's finally good to. I love preseason and all, but I love getting into actual game action.
3 days away, a lot of good pitching matchups in opening day. I'm just looking at the full slate. My two favorites are probably Nola versus DeGrom and Scherzer versus Sandy, but there's a lot of other good ones there. And we got a lot of fun stuff to talk about today. But before we get into that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris at RotoClegg. I am EricCross04, and our show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Check out my Patreon for more work from me and Chris's Substack for more work from him. We got rankings, extra articles, Dynasty ADP over on Chris's. A lot of fun stuff on both of those platforms. We greatly appreciate the support on both of those. And before we get into the show, we want to say a quick word about our friends at Underdog Fantasy. If you start using the promo code Toolshed, you'll receive a 100% deposit match up to $100. And that can be used for any of their fun fantasy games, including MLB best balls, individual player pick'ems across all sports, and so much more. Sign up today using that code Toolshed at play.underdogfantasy.com/P-the-toolshed. All right, we got a little bit of news and notes today, but the big kind of chunk of the show is going to be some dynasty movers, you know, guys that are, you know, not necessarily from spring training, but maybe from the offseason a little bit. You know, injuries have happened, new roles have happened, struggles, everything kind of wrapped into one. So we'll kind of discuss some trending dynasty names in this episode as well. But let's start with the kind of biggest news right now. Jordan Walker making the opening day roster for St. Louis, and I couldn't be more excited. Obviously, you and I have seen Jordan Walker, and I think we're both incredibly high on Jordan Walker. And it's funny because a few weeks ago, when he was really balling out early in spring training, everyone was about to put him into the Hall of Fame already, right? And then I put out a tweet over the weekend on Sunday when he made the opening day roster, and I was like, all right, here are my projections for him. And they were, you know, a bit aggressive. But not, I don't think they were like, you know, unrealistic by any means. Yeah, it was a little bold, but I put out a slash line of 260, 340, 520, 27 home runs, 10 steals, to which all these people that were all putting him in the Hall of Fame a few weeks ago are now like, whoa, pump the brakes there. I don't think that's, you know, unrealistic by any means. That was over 625 plate appearances. He's going to play every day. Like, this, they didn't do this for him to, like, you know, start three times a week or something like that. He's going to play regularly, so I think he can reach those and then those numbers and that plate appearances. But, Chris, what are your thoughts? What are your short-term and long-term expectations for Mr. Jordan Walker?
Well, I thought he was going to make it all spring, and then like 2 days ago, I finally came in the camp that he wasn't going to make it because I really thought the shoulder was still bothering him just right. Due to the stats he was putting up. Like, he hasn't performed well since the shoulder injury. So I was just like, okay, like maybe he's not going to make it and maybe they're going to slow play it because he's hurt. Totally whiffed there. But I'd been in the camp that he's going to make it kind of all spring. So it's good to see that. I'm very happy for him. And it looks like we'll have more prospects make it too, like Volpe, that haven't debuted. So it's very encouraging. I don't know. I'm tampering expectations a bit just because the power hasn't really translated to home runs. Like, he hits the ball scorching hard, but last year he only hit 19 home runs. And, you know, he puts up some high end exit velos, like really, really good. But I think that probably a reasonable expectation would be like a 250 type average. I would say 15, 20 home runs. 20 is probably safer than 15. I'd say he's on the higher side of the 15 to 20. And 10 stolen bases. So, like, just considering what kind of production that is, I think people are going to go insane on him now that he's made the team. Like, if you're still drafting, but is he worth a top 100 pick? Like, I don't really know. Like, I'm just trying to think through, like, what player would be comparable to this kind of stat line if he put it up. And that's what I'm kind of struggling with, but I think he's probably worth like a top 150 pick just for the upside, but you're definitely not going to get him there. So I am excited. I obviously hope that he goes all Julio Rodriguez on everybody, but I would say that should not be the expectation.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone should expect Julio Rodriguez numbers, but, and yeah, I know I kind of went a little high with my 27 home runs, but look at what he did in the minor leagues. He averaged, if you extrapolate out to the 625 plate appearances that I projected for this year for him, He had 23 home runs per 625 in the minor leagues, all through 33 in 902 plate appearances. And, you know, obviously the quality of contact is there. We've seen him smoke balls, 110 plus, 115 plus. And I think it's just that game power slowly starting to translate over. So I think 20 plus is definitely possible. Yeah, 27 is probably been on the high end, but I'm definitely a Walker believer. And it seems like you saw that video that St. Louis posted about when he got the announcement in, you know, in the office near the clubhouse, and, you know, talking about, you know, the adversity that he dealt with and became, and all the, like, all those off the field, you know, non-skill stuff, like all the intangibles that they just spoke so highly of him. So, like, everything I've seen from Walker seems like he has a good head on his shoulders. He has all the makings of a future star. But yeah, this year, I think, you know, I won't take him top 100, but this is a guy that, let's just split the middle here. Let's say he goes like kind of in between what you just said, what I have projections. But so let's say he's like, you know, 22, 23 home runs, hitting like 255, maybe 10, 11, 12 steals. If he does that, I think this could be enough to put him, what, top? If he does that, Chris, what do you think for ADP for Walker next year? Like top, probably top 30 or so, probably top two rounds.
Yeah, just because the hype. Like, if any rookie and high end prospect comes up and performs, like, their ADP is going to skyrocket. So, I mean, J-Rod was obviously, what he did last year was insane, but he went, I'm pulling it up, 28-25. With 284 average, and he's obviously at the very top. So I think top 30s, pretty reasonable expectation there.
Now, looking at peak, what do you think? You think peak Walker is what, top 10 pick, top 15 pick? I think he can get into that first round territory. Like, I think if we're looking at, you know, I think peak Walker is like, you know, 35 home run, 35 to 40 home runs. I think he's still going to be running, I think, at least double digit steals for the first, you know, several years of his career. And I think he'll probably get up to, you know, maybe a 270-ish average guy. So, you know, plus all, you know, pretty good run score and RBI totals in a good St. Louis lineup. So I think he does that. I think we're looking at some guy that'll be probably taken ahead of like Pete Alonso, kind of in that 12 to 15 range, I think. So I think it could be like Pete Alonso, maybe take a few less home runs, but add some speed into there as well.
Yeah, I think that 30-35 home runs is probably peak with 10 to 15 steals, and I think he could hit 280. So that's obviously a very high-end player, and that provides a lot of value. And, you know, I've really been thinking about, like, prospects peak, and, you know, I've thought about, especially with Volpe likely to debut too. So, like, we'll have Carroll, Gunnar Henderson, Anthony Volpe, and Jordan Walker. Like, how do all these shake out long term? And I don't know. I think that Walker could be better than Henderson long term. And I think that potentially Volpe might too, which is interesting. So I don't know. I've been really debating and toying in my head, like, how I really think about these guys long term. But I do think Walker's ceiling's like a first round talent, like caliber player.
Yeah. No, totally agree. And I thought about that too. You know, him versus Gunner, I think definitely he has the higher, not like by a long shot, but I think he does have the higher ceiling. Like, everything clicks for all these guys. Let's say, hypothetically, that'd be awesome, first off. But I think everything clicks for both Henderson and Walker. I think Walker's the better fantasy player. So I think they're very close in rankings right now. Before I get to Volpe, though, you know, with Walker on the opening day roster, obviously, you know, like I said, he's going to play. Like, they didn't bring him up to start, you know, only a few times a week. So What's the fallout here? Obviously, Tyler O'Neill, as long as he's healthy, he'll be in that lineup. So, you know, you can see Walker DH a bit as well. So ultimately, it's like some, you know, the trio of Carlson, as you already got optioned down, and Alec Burleson. Kind of like, what are your long-term thoughts on these three? Like, you think it's going to take a change of scenery for these guys to really ever have a shot? Are you still in on any of the three, Carlson, Burleson, or Yepez? Are you mostly out? What are your thoughts on these three?
Well, I do think that a trade's probably likely. I don't know how it all shakes out, but I will say I don't think that Walker's coming up just to DH. Like, that you right. don't bring up a top prospect and just put him at DH. Like, he's going to play the field and he's going to continue to develop there, which means I do think Dylan Carlson's the odd man out there in the outfield. So Carlson could get reps at DH. I don't see his bat being a DH type bat. So that's my concern there. You know, Nolan Gorman's also having a big spring. So what do they do with him? So now you have a combination of Burleson, Juan Yepez, and Nolan Gorman, who don't really have spots. And, you know, looking at Gorman and Yepez profile, like, they need to be at first base most likely. And, you know, that's not happening anytime soon with Paul Goldschmidt. Despite his age, like, he's still around for a while. Third base is locked up. Arenado's not leaving there anytime soon. So I do think a trade is possibly in the works, especially because, I mean, just being honest, like, the rotation is, it's okay. I mean, you have Adam Wainwright, who's out for who knows how long, but he's 41 and a half years old. I mean, Jack Flaherty just isn't good anymore. Like, he's been awful all spring. You just re-signed Miles Mikolas. And so basically you have like Mikolas and Jordan Montgomery you can rely on, and then maybe Steven Matz and Jake Woodford. So I could see some of these guys being shipped out for pitching. Yeah, I don't know how or what, but I'd be intrigued. Like, I think there's a couple fits with the Cardinals and the Yankees fallouts with the Braves, actually. For the Braves have a stockpile of arms, and the Braves need a shortstop and a left fielder. And I think that Carlson could line up there. Yeah, I don't think they trade him. I really don't, but be interesting. And we'll talk about Volpe and Oswald Peraza there. I'll say Oswald Cabrera. There's too many Oswalds there, but
right.
So I don't know. I do think a change of scenery is needed, but who's taking on Nolan Gorman right now? I mean, just honestly, like, he's not a highly coveted player in a trade that he once was. So Burleson, I don't know. Burleson's interesting. He just needs time, and I don't know where he's going to fit in. He's definitely the odd man out here in the outfield.
Now, let's say you're the Braves GM right now, Chris, and St. Louis came knocking or calling and said, all right, we'll give you one of Burleson or Juan Yepez or Carlson. Pick your one of the three for like an Anderson or something like that. Think that'll get it done?
Yeah, I've seen the hypothetical as for like an Ian Anderson type deal, which would be interesting. My preference would be, and I don't think the Yankees would deal Peraza, but if they would deal Peraza for one of the arms that's in the Braves org, I would prefer to do that. But if I'm taking one of these, then I'm probably like Yepez's bat probably fits the lineup best just overall. Like, you know, obviously he doesn't have a true position. He'd probably be DHing, but like Yepez probably could fit in the Braves lineup and take the spot that like they hope that Marcell Ozuna can feel, that I'm not very confident that he could.
Right. But moving over to, as we kind of talk about a little bit, the Yankees here as well, has not been announced as of right now, but it's starting to look like Anthony Volpe is going to make this team. I mean, it'd be so hard. Like I said, the streets of New York would maybe be rioting in the streets of New York if Volpe didn't make the opening day at this point. And then even Roster Resource has kind of made that swap too. They now have, take it for what it's worth, but they have Volpe as the starting shortstop now over Oswald Peraza, who has not had the greatest spring. I see Volpe has been one of the most impressive players overall this spring. Do you think that happens, Chris? Do you think there's, you know, let's fast forward a few days here. Is Volpe the starting shortstop?
Yes. I
think so too.
I wasn't in that camp at all. I just logically didn't make sense because Peraza's the better fielder. Peraza's already debuted. Volpe wasn't on the 40-man. So logically, it made sense for them to just start out the year and see what they had in Peraza. And yeah, it doesn't seem like that's the case. They've been very vocal and outspoken that they want Volpe to be their shortstop. And he stepped up to the plate. I mean, he's been good this spring training, and he certainly earned that. And, you know, kudos to him for doing that. And I think this is a case where, you know, Oswald Peraza is a good player, but Oswald Peraza is never going to be a stud. And I think that you look at Volpe and like Volpe could be the future of the franchise. Like, he'd be like the face of this franchise. And that's just so enticing, especially when he's performing up to standard and what you hope you'd see out of him more in spring training, to show that he's ready to be that guy for them. It's 21 years old. So I think it's Volpe, and I think that Volpe is really intriguing now. And that ETA's made me really reconsider my prospect rankings too, like I was talking about. So I'm really interested to see what we get out of him this year.
Yeah, and as somebody that I've seen Volpe a bunch of times when he came through AA, like, I loved Volpe. And he's one of those guys that I think he's fallen to what I call like the Lindor range, where, you know, and people have already commented, like, well, look at his OPS. Like, don't look at his OPS. I was like, Lindor has an OPS of like 790 something last year. Like, stop. Look at that right now. Look at, you know, some of these guys like the Lindors and the Bichettes. They don't run like super high OPSs. So that's not the end of the world in fantasy, especially if there are guys that can add steals. That's all we care about, right? We care about, you know, the home runs, the steals, the runs scored, the RBI, etc. And I think Volpe's going to be a very good category guy. Like, this is a guy that went as back-to-back years in the minor leagues with 20-plus home runs, 30-plus steals, and a walk rate well above 10%. Yeah, he hit 249 last year, but that still came with a full 460 slug, 342 OBP, and 211 ISO, 35 doubles as well. And a lot of that in the, you know, their East pitcher-friendly Eastern League, and AA raised 80% of his season last year. Like, this guy's a baller, and we've seen that. I expect this to happen, obviously, but I was very much a Volpe believer and supporter, even when he was struggling at some parts of last season. So I think he's going to be, you know, around a 20 homer bat at the major league level, maybe 16 to 22 range for home runs. I think he's 25 plus steals. I think he's a solid average, good OBP as well, and a guy that probably eventually turns into a top of the order type of guy, whether it's leadoff or number two, something like that. And I still, though, think that I'm still trying to struggle with it. He's okay defensively, short, doesn't have the greatest arm. The arm fits more at second base, so I still wonder.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
If he's there long term and still have Peraza at short, and then they make my thought process has always been like, all right, these two in the middle infield, and then they trade Glaber for a pitcher midseason, especially if the Seve and or Stone injuries linger a bit, which obviously they could. So I want to see how this kind of plans out. It could play out several different ways. We'll see. But with Peraza, definitely still, you know, in on Peraza. I think if you could buy low on Peraza, I would. I think there's still a solid fantasy player in there, given the power speed he's shown over the last couple of years. And yeah, Volpe, I think, is the real deal. And he's definitely a top five, you know, caliber prospect. And it's the top three right now. And any order you want to put them, you know, you got Corbin Carroll at one, and Henderson right there behind him, and slight smidgen of a drop off for me. And then it's like, you know, the Volpes, the Lawlers, the James Woods, the Cherios, guys like that. So I think Volpe's right there. You could put him as high as four, and that'd be very much okay with it, especially in OBP formats. He gets a little bit higher in OBP formats, but yeah, I'm definitely buying him. And a couple other, though, Yankee hitters here. Well, Dominguez was, we already talked about him. I've kind of been really performing well this spring that haven't really gotten, they don't get really talked about as much as they probably should. That's Oswaldo Cabrera. Again, like Chris mentioned, there's too many Oswaldo guys on this team, along with Andres Chaparro. Cabrera in 18 games has four home runs and a steal, hitting 306, 358, 592. And Chaparro in 19 games, so it's, you know, he's only gotten a couple of bats per game, so play appearances are a little bit less, but he has five home runs and a 314, 400, 743 slash line. Cabrera does look like he should get some run in the outfield this year, though how much still kind of remains to be seen. You know, they got Hicks out there. They got, obviously, Aaron Judge. Stanton will play a little bit out there. So I wonder how much Cabrera does play, though. It's only a matter of time before Hicks and or Stanton get hurt. And then Chaparro, I mean, he's not going to be factoring right away. I think he starts in AAA this year, obviously. But where does he fit in long term? He's probably a first base DH type, but the bat definitely very intriguing. So what are your thoughts long term on Oswaldo Cabrera and Chaparro, Chris? Are those two dynasty targets for you?
Yeah, I think Cabrera's really under the radar. The nice thing is he can play everywhere. So like he can literally play any position in the infield and even the outfield too. So that certainly gives him a boost of playing time. Just right now, just looking at this lineup, you know, there could possibly be some, you know, Donaldson doesn't stay healthy. So, you know, Cabrera is going to play at third. I mean, the outfield is just not that impressive either when you look at, you know, Judge and center is great. I just don't trust Stanton to stay healthy and right, and Aaron Hicks in left. So I think that he's going to end up finding plenty of time here to play. And it's an intriguing bat as well. I think that this year, I expect 400 plate appearances out of Oswaldo Cabrera. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's a 15 home run, like 5+ steal type with a respectable batting average. Now, when you look at Chaparro, some will say he doesn't have the glove for third. He's, you know, seems like the heir apparent to Josh Donaldson. I think he's ready to take over Josh Donaldson's job right now. And he may end up at first. That's fine. Like, you know, Rizzo is around for, I don't even like remember how much longer he's around. I think he's around for 2 more years.
I believe it is too. Yeah.
So Chaparro could DH, go to first. He could play third. I'm not sure they want him to play third, but Chaparro's bat is certainly really good and pretty underrated in my opinion. He's one that never really got the love that he deserved. And even in my prospect rankings, he didn't. And so he's bumped up to his deserved place and, you know, hits the ball really hard. He makes good contact in the zone, doesn't chase all that often. He just does everything you want to see, like massive, massive poolside power. We've seen that this year in spring training with him just hitting some absolute tanks. So, you know, I don't know how much we even see. We may not even see him this year, Andres Chaparro, that is, but that's fine. I think long-term, he's still a player that I really like in Dynasty. But Cabrera is just going to be like this super utility guy, maybe like a Chris Taylor type. And, you know, Chris Taylor was really valuable to the Dodgers. And I think Cabrera can play that kind of same role with the Yankees. And that only helps for fantasy purposes that he's available all over the board.
Yeah. And you look at Oswaldo Cabrera here, you know, in the minor leagues. So overall, he played, how many games in the minor leagues did he play? 580 games in the minor leagues over several seasons. He played, you know, a little bit of first, but not much. Over 200 games at second, over 100 games at third, over 150 games at short, and obviously some in the outfield as well. So yeah, he can play all over the field, and that will definitely help him, that flexibility, get into the lineup. I mean, look at what he did the last couple of years here. In 2021, he went 29-21, hit 272 between those, mostly at Double A, a little bit Triple A end of the season. And then in 2022, only 52 games, but still went 9 home runs, 13 steals, hit 269 in mostly Triple A. Then he had a little bit of rehab assignment in the lower minors as well. And then came up and had 6 home runs and 3 steals in 44 games with the Yankees. So that equates out to, you know, like a full season pace. So you're talking like low 20s home runs and, you know, right around a 2010-ish pace or so. I don't think he ever hits for, you know, a high average, probably like a 250-ish guy. He hit 263 in the minor leagues. Didn't walk a ton either. So that probably never is a good source of average or OBP, though. At the same time, I don't think he'll kill you in either area as well. And yeah, like Chris said, you know, it could be, you know, like a 15, 18 homer guy, maybe, you know, 8 to 10 steals, something like that. A very kind of sneaky good player that I think will be a good target. And Chaparro, I saw him when he came to Double A, like I knew the name, but I hadn't really dug in to Chaparro at the time. This is like, you know, we're talking like May or something of this past year. And there was a 6-game set. Obviously, they do the 6-game sets for the most part in the minor leagues now. And so I saw him. I think I went to 4 of those 6 games, if I recall. And I saw him again a couple more times in the series about a month and a half later. And like hitting the, it didn't necessarily translate into like, you know, loud, you know, numbers in the box score or anything like that. But the dude was just hitting the ball hard, didn't strike out a whole ton. That's been kind of his thing. He's never been a big K rate guy, a solid approach, you know, kind of sneaky, good pop. So yeah, I think he could be, you know, even better than like a Mark Vientos. I don't think there's much of a gap between the two. But I think Vientos has more power. Chaparro's probably a little bit of a better pure hitter, but I think he's sneaky good, and I want to see where he fits into this long-term plan as well. All right, keeping it in the American League East here. We weren't sure where to put Alek Manoah. We didn't necessarily want to put him as a follower because he isn't really falling down our rankings, and overall the numbers have been fine this spring, but the velo has been consistently down, and that's the thing. Like, a lot of pitchers have had their velo down this spring. I think that's kind of normal. They're adjusting to the, you know, quicker tempo, and maybe they're not trying to throw as hard. But, you know, if they were down like, you know, half to a full mile an hour, okay, fine. But he's been down, especially on the four-seamer and the sinker, 2+ miles an hour consistently from last year. But again, numbers have been fine. Chris, you know, I guess how worried are you? In general, I've been, I think, a little bit lower than most of Manoah, but I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm necessarily worried per se. But definitely, this is at least a little bit concerning here that he's down more than 2 miles an hour. And I think in the second to last start, he was down over 3 miles an hour on the four-seamer. So I guess how worried are you? And are you reacting to this in Dynasty Leagues?
I'm not. I was a little concerned, but you're right. Overall, there's been a lot of people that are pretty down. And so at the end of the day, I've kind of stepped back and been like, okay, the results have still been there. I mean, we're looking at so far this spring, he's thrown 20 in a third innings. He has a 3.10 ERA, 21 strikeouts, 8 walks. So this reminds me a bit of Shane Bieber last year, whereby I was like freaking out about Shane Bieber's velo being down, and Bieber still had a sub-3 ERA. Like, it didn't affect him at all. So yeah, you obviously want to see the velo up, or at least where it was. But at the end of for some guys, it's like, it just doesn't matter. And if you're locating it well enough, then you're going to be okay. And I think that's ultimately the case with Manoah. And even though, like, yeah, it's concerning when you look and see, you know, 2.5 down, 2.1 down on the four-seam and sinker. But I don't know. I'm just, like, not overly concerned because overall, there's a lot of pitchers that are just really down. And I wonder if it has to do with the pitch clock. They're just trying to get their rhythm going. And, you know, if the velo stays down in the season, I'm not sure it affects him too much. I just kind of look back and at the whole Bieber situation last year where everybody panicked and ultimately Bieber was still a lead. So, you know, it's not what you want to see, but I'm not panicking. I'm not really selling in Dynasty. I'm not really dropping him a considerable amount until we actually see this play out more in Dynasty League or in the regular season, I think.
Yeah, I'm kind of a similar boat to you. I said, even though I've been a little bit lower than most on Manoah, and I'm not really, you know, a buyer of his in general, except the numbers have been fine. 5 starts, 3.10 ERA. Another thing too, you know, kind of going along with the spring theme here of velo being a bit down, a lot of guys that didn't walk a lot of guys before are walking a lot of guys this spring. And okay, I think this is all just, hey, that's what spring training's for, right? Working out the kinks, so to speak, with everything, including some new rule changes. You see, Manoah, not so much. He has 8 walks and 20 and a third. That's not terrible. But like, you saw guys like Zach Gallen's walking a ton. There's a lot of names that are just fucking level than you've come to expect from these guys. So I think it's just, yeah, see how it plays out in the season. But, you know, he's not one I've been ever super high on. I think he's fine for what he is. I think he's a solid, like, SP2 type of guy. I think some people value him as an ace. I'm not there, but it's something to monitor with him moving forward. Is he still down 2 miles an hour in the season? Will that affect him? Do the stats kind of start taking a nosedive because of it? Something to monitor, I guess, is what we're trying to say here. Next up, going over to the National League East, some other of the big injury news. A lot of unfortunate injury news over the last couple of weeks, but Rhys Hoskins down for the year, torn ACL, a non-contact. He was just running out a pop-out behind first base, and just kind of went down. So, you know, I don't know if his foot slipped. I don't know. It's just one of those kind of weird injuries. And then Now, Derek Hall, who was already going to have some early season value because of Bryce Harper being out for, you know, 2 months or so, I think he now is a guy that could stick the entire year. Yeah, he'll get sat against a tough lefty, but I think Hall will be in there for a good amount of the season. The power's there. We'll see if he can make it stick. But kind of what are your thoughts about what's going on in Philly with the Hoskins and with Derek Hall?
This is an interesting situation. I mean, Hall's certainly a platoon guy. So how does it shake out? You know, maybe they sign Luke Voit, who didn't make the team in Milwaukee. You know, Luke Voit's just kind of passed around everywhere. So
that would be fun.
That would be fun. You know what I do think it does, though? I think it allows Bryce Harper to come back and place him in the field and play first base because he's not going to be able to throw for a little bit. So I think it allows Harper to come back. They can move Bohm over to first, but who do they put at third then? Right. I think that's your question. Like, I think if you move one of these guys off the bench to third, then you're limiting your offensive potential. Like, they want to run out. The Phillies have shown they want to run out their best offense no matter the cost on defense, as we've seen with Schwarber and Castellanos and those out in the outfield. So I don't think they're going to go with something crazy. I do think it's a possibility that they pick up Luke Voit and at least give it a shot. You know, worst case, you know, right now, all it's going to do is if they sign Luke Voit to play first base, Hall bumps back to DH, Schwarber bumps back to left, Jake Caves out of the lineup. Who cares? If it fails, whatever. You just go back to this lineup that they're considering running now with Jake Cave in left, Marsh in center, Castellanos in right, Schwarber at DH, and Hall at first. So, you know, the fallout will be interesting. I'm not sure how it shakes out, but I think there's still a move to be made personally.
And Luke Voit would be such a Philadelphia signing. Like, he fits the exact mold you just said about, hey, let's throw out the best offense and who cares about defense, which is hilarious. It's right. Fun, but hilarious. But yeah, I think Voit would be a great, great addition to them. So man, maybe if Luke Voit was dropped in your league, you know, deeper league here, maybe go give him a speculative ad to see if that does happen or if he watches on some results where, you know, full-time playing time might be an opportunity there. But yeah, Hall, I think he's, I don't know. I think Hall is going to be an impactful power. I think you can see Hall hit like 25 home runs this year, but where's the average at? And I think he probably gets 450, 475, maybe flirts with 500 plate appearances, you know, as a lefty. Platoon will be strong, set platoon, so that helps. But I won't be going crazy over Derek Hall. And with Rhys Hoskins, wasn't this the last year of Rhys Hoskins' contract, if I recall correctly?
Yep, it's a walk year for him.
Yeah, that's why I thought so. Wonder how that plays out for him long term. Obviously, Hoskins has been, you know, the epitome of just consistency. Like, look at the last four full years between 27 and 4 home runs. He always gives you like 80 to 90 RBI, hits you, you know, pretty much right in that 245. He's almost like the new Chris Davis. His last four full years, or the four to last 5 years, excuse me, he's hit 245, 246, or 247 with a pretty good OBP as well. So very unfortunate injury. I think a lot of people had, you know, he was like the fallback at first base. Like, you didn't get one of the elite guys. Didn't want to go after like that mid-range tier of Lowe or, you know, Jose Abreu or even a Vinny P, something like that. And Hoskins was, all right, you know what you're getting out of him, 245 and 30 home runs and maybe 160 combined runs in RBI, which is basically what he did last year to a T. Yeah, so that's a big blow, but we'll see how this kind of shakes here, if they go out and sign somebody or not. Then finally, before we get into the risers and fallers, Raziel Iglesias with shoulder inflammation to start the season on the IL here. And that means AJ Minter, who was already, like, if you play in saves and holds leagues, AJ Minter was already like a dynamite option because he led the major leagues and holds last year. Now he gets to, you know, maybe not full time close, but I think he'll be the guy that kind of way all while Iglesias is out. So Minter, you know, let's say you play saves only league where Minter might have some boost in value now. How good do you think he can be? Do you think he's a top 15, top 20 reliever in those formats for the time being?
Yeah, I 100% think so. I mean, Minter provides elite ratios. He provides high end strikeouts. He does everything you want to see. And, you know, last year, 70 innings, 2.06 ERA, 0.91 whip with a 35% K rate and 5% walk rate. So Minter has been trusted in this closer role in the past. And I don't see why he wouldn't get the first crack. I just don't think Joe Jimenez is good, personally. I don't think the Braves want him in the closer role, but there's been talk that a lot of people seem to think that he will get it. I just don't really see that personally. So I'm definitely grabbing AJ Minter, and I have the expectation that Minter can be really, really good, personally. And I think that if he does get early crack at saves and runs with it, who knows what happens? I mean, Iglesias was a lead out of the, you know, seventh and eighth inning last year in Atlanta. So you just never know here. Now, could they go with a platoon type split thing? It's possible, but we've seen them also trust Will Smith as a lefty in the closer role for a couple years. So I think Snicker is going to pick the guy and roll with it. And I think that guy's AJ Minter.
Yeah, I do think that's the I think people are like, oh, well, Minter's a lefty. I don't necessarily always go to that. Like, yeah, he's a lefty, but this is a guy that can just get anybody out. So I don't really think that's an issue. Yeah, maybe they'll bring him in, you know, maybe in the eighth inning if you post a team has a couple of good lefties coming up to bat. Yeah, you can see, I don't think Minter will be the everyday, like, lockdown closer. And we don't even see that in general much anymore these days. But, yeah, Minter, I'd definitely be running out to get Minter much more than Jimenez. I agree. I don't think he's that – he's okay, I guess. But Minter is 10 times better than Jimenez. So I'd definitely go out and get Minter. All right, moving over to some Dynasty risers and fallers here, some trending names. Let's start with some of the guys that are more so on the falling side here. The one I wanted to start out with was Christopher Morel. And yeah, he's, you know, putting up some nice power speed numbers again this spring. You know, maybe, I think he's an OPS over 900, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, he's still striking out a ton. One of the highest K rates in spring training, over 40%. And you look at the last year, again, it was fun. Like that little, what was it, like a month or so stretch where he was one of the better fantasy players in baseball. That was fun, but there's a lot of red flags in this profile. I mean, yeah, start, you know, power speed is solid. He had a 40% hard hit rate last year. 447 xWOBA.com, 13.4% barrel rate.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Sure, that's fine. That's not like, you know, great, but it's good. But 51% ground ball rate limits that power. And the approach is really where the issues lie. Year, 32.2% K rate, 38.3% whiff, 65.2% zone contact. And let's put that in perspective. League average last year was 82% zone contact and right around 25% whiff. And just the contact rates are not good at all. Too much swing and miss. He'll probably be maybe in a super utility role. I don't know where he fits in. I don't think he's going to be an everyday starter anywhere, but I still think he'll get his playing time. But I think he's like a poor man's Javier Baez. So that's not really a profile I want to invest in personally.
No, I'm not really in on Morel at all. I just don't really see the, I mean, there is intrigue. The power and speed's intriguing. So other than that, I just think there's so much downside with his profile too. I mean, the debut was fun last year where he hit 16 home runs, stole 10 bags, but someone had 308 OBP, a 235 average. The swing's a good bit out of the zone. His zone contact was 68.9%. That's just not good. Contact rate was one of the lower in the majors at 63.4. And then on top of that, when he's making contact, he's hitting it on the ground 50% of the time. I don't know. I'm just not very intrigued, especially when you look at the high strikeout rates. Look at the swinging strike rate as well. It's just like, okay, like this just doesn't strike me as an everyday player, especially because he's not like a standout with his glove either. If he was actually a good, like good glove, then maybe, but he's not great in the field. Doesn't have a true position. That really worries me too. And he's horrific against breaking and off-speed pitches, which does hurt his chance. I mean, he had a 38% whiff rate on every pitch type. He got away with it some against fastballs, but against breaking and off-speed, he had a 197 and 190 batting average. So I'm just not in on Morrell. I would probably just sell him if you could. If you could in Dynasty somehow, I don't know. But I'm just really not into this profile, honestly.
Yeah, this is not a profile I like to just get in on in general. And like I said, he's a poor man's Javi Baez in my eyes. And that's just going to be more frustration than joy. So not one I want to hitch my wagon to, that's for sure. Chris Taylor, obviously not like a super high name, but I wonder if this is finally the year that Chris Taylor kind of like falls out of favor. And with the Dodgers, like last year, he had 15 home runs, 10 steals, you know, add in his multi-position eligibility, and they had some value. Same time, you know, they just brought over Miguel Rojas. Yeah, they did Gavin Lux, but, you know, Trace Thompson in the outfield as well. James Outman made the team. I like James Outman a decent amount here. So is this finally the year, Chris, where Chris Taylor just stops being a thing for fantasy? I mean, he's been fine for what he is over the years. Like I said, multi-position eligibility, a little bit of power and speed at that 15-10 range, but is this finally the year that, all right, Chris Taylor is not a thing no more?
Probably. I really thought that he would be. He would rebound this year because falling for the trap of going to driveline, increased his bat speed, all this stuff. And it's like, okay, this all is great, but he's been awful this spring. I mean, he struck out 23 times in 57 plate appearances, 125 average, 188 slug, just not good. I don't know. I thought that, especially with the Gavin Lux injury too, that this was an opportunity for him to step in and get time. But yeah, it's just not looking like he wants to earn it. And maybe it is the year that he just completely falls out of favor with the Dodgers, despite being a pretty intriguing util type player. The only thing I will say that he has going for him is that they're paying him a decent chunk. I know $15 million, not much for the Dodgers, but he's still signed through 2025. So I have a hard time thinking that they just like totally just stop playing him. But at the same time, like he's got to perform too. So I don't know. I'm kind of out on Chris Taylor, and I was pretty excited in like January about him, and I'm just not anymore.
You know, it's funny though. You mentioned how much he was getting paid. It's funny the disparity between like some of the top teams, some of the bottom teams in terms of what these players are getting paid. Look at the Dodgers. Like they're paying a bench guy like Taylor $15 million a year. Yeah, I just saw that the third highest player in terms of salary on the Cincinnati Reds this year is going to be Ken Griffey Jr.
What?
It's something with the salary structure from many, many years ago. He's getting like 3-point-something million this year. Only Will Myers at 6-something million, and then Joey Votto's at like 24 million, whatever. Making more this year on Cincinnati than Griffey. I saw that. I had to fact check it. It's true. I'm like, oh my word. That is, but not to get sidetracked there. But no, you see Griffey taking, you know, BP at PC. Like, and it was funny. Like, you see him when he was taking BP, when he was in the cage, everybody, even like Mike Trout, just like they were a kid again, man. Like, just watching Griffey, he still got it. Like, Griffey could still, man, I think Griffey could still and do something. No, probably
I
not.
Think so.
He's 53 at this point, but man, he's still got the swing. It's still beautiful, man. Like that swing is not going anywhere. Where were I? I just got completely sidetracked by Griffey, but yeah, I don't think Taylor really is he's still going to play, but in terms of fantasy relevance, I don't even see much of that this year. But the one I'm really intrigued by, like I kind of alluded to, was James Outman. It's still very much a question of how much he plays, but James Outman is a very intriguing fantasy player. Just because of what he can provide in terms of power and speed. And yeah, there's a bit of swing and miss in the profile, obviously. You said, you know, last couple of years for minors, but at the same time, you're talking about a guy that went 18 home runs, 23 steals in 4 games back in AA and AA in 2021. And then 2022, AA and AAA, hit 294, 393, 586 with 31 doubles, 31 home runs, and 13 steals. Walk rate over 10%. So definitely a lot of intrigue there if he can get playing time. But they brought in David Peralta this offseason. J.D. Martinez will DH as well. So I don't know. And again, Trace Thompson's there. Obviously, Mookie Betts is locked into right field. Where does, you know, it's probably some sort of like rotation, you know, rotating tune with him, with Thompson, with Peralta. You know, Outman's a lefty, Peralta's a lefty, Thompson's a righty. I don't know. How do you see this playing out, Chris? And in general, are you looking to target Outman in dynasty leagues right now?
I love the profile. I really do. My biggest fear is that they just don't play him. I don't know. I mean, you never know with the Dodgers, but I really just have it in the back of my head. They're just going to roll with like Jason Hayward out there.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention Hayward too. Yeah.
Yeah. Hayward's been leading off a ton for them in spring training, which is like, wow. But here we are. So there's just a lot of bodies right now out there with, we know Betts, we know Trace Thompson, David Peralta, Jason Hayward. So how does Outman fit? Now, the best case scenario might be for Mookie to go to second base for Outman. That opens up a better chance of playing.
That would be fun. And they mentioned that too. I think, was it Dave Roberts said yep. that you could see Betts more at second base, whether that's enough to gain him eligibility. They probably, you'll probably get him in Yahoo leagues. So the threshold's like five stars or something like that. It's the lowest, but if you're playing on Fantrax or even like NFBC, where, you know, Fantrax could be whatever, 10, 15, 20, whatever you want. But NFBC obviously is 20. I don't know if he gets to 20, but that would be really fun if Mookie got that. But, and then speaking of second base real quick, like, you know, we talk about Outman trying to get in. Michael Busch is like 43 years old and still can't break into this damn lineup. So it's like, yeah. I just wish that they would give these couple of these guys a chance here.
I agree. It's kind of frustrating to see Jason Hayward and David Peralta on this team. I don't think they make the Dodgers any better. I mean, Miguel Rojas at short, maybe for the glove only. Like, let the kids play at some point. So that's the frustrating thing here. The only problem with Mookie going to second is where does Miguel Vargas then go? That's
exactly.
You know, Muncy's at third. So Freeman's at first. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, it's hard. It's like we're trying to fit like square pegs in the round holes here. Like, yeah. Trying to find like that perfect blend of, oh, this guy moves here, and then, oh, we can get this guy in. But no, there's just so many names everywhere that even if you shift them around, it's like, all right, you still got like three guys that are the odd men out here.
Yeah, I will say if Outman plays every day or plays majority of the time, this is a really intriguing profile. I mean, we're talking, let's say he's on the strong side of a platoon. He's a left-handed bat. So say he manages to get 450 plate appearances. Like, we're looking at big power. I mean, last year, he hit the ball really hard. He had a 107, 290 EV, which is extremely high.
Yep.
His sweet spot rate was 40%. Like, that's insanely ideal. A ton of line drives and healthy fly balls. He doesn't chase. I mean, his chase rate was like 20%, which is like, we talk about Carroll and Henderson having elite chase rates. That's exactly where they are, too. Hard hit rate was 46%. Like, all these things that you really want to see. You know, the contact is fine. I mean, it's not like overwhelmingly awesome, but he's got some decent speed to go with it too. So I think James Outman's really intriguing with the chance that he does play. He's got to find the spot, and I'm afraid he doesn't, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. Like I said, we're still trying to get Michael Busch into the lineup here, which has been an issue in itself. So, yeah, in general, I would still be buying Outman, Michael Busch, these types of guys. Maybe there's a little bit of, you know, especially with Busch, some prospect fatigue that people were just tired of waiting for him to be able to get his chance. You never know. Injuries pop up. It could be a trade tomorrow. Who knows? So I would still, you know, bank on the talent, you know, Busch and Outman here, that they will eventually have some value for a fantasy team. So I'd definitely be buying both of them. One more guy that's kind of a follower right now, another guy that's injured again, that kind of factors into a lot of this. Luis Severino from the New York Yankees, who A, was terrible this spring in general. And again, we don't try to put like too much emphasis on spring performances, but in five starts, he 15 innings pitched, 15 hits, 15 runs, six home runs allowed, 140 whip, 9 ERA on the nose. And now he's out again. I don't know, man. Like, when Sevy has shown that he could be one of the most talented arms in the game, we've seen that. But that's becoming, you know, a distant memory at this point. And something we're seeing few and far between are those dominant stretches, because the guy just can't stay on the mounds full time. So with all these injuries that are just racking up now, he is now, how old is Sebi now? He is 29 now, which again, not super old, but 19 starts last year, has not made 30 starts since he did back-to-back in 2017 and 2018. Is there just too much risk here that outweighs the potential reward now, Chris?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's becoming one of those things where it's like once injured, always injured kind of thing, and you hate to really throw that label out, but he just can't stay healthy. And that's kind of my fear here, is that we're looking at a pitcher who, in Luis Severino, that just can't stay healthy at all. And that really concerns me. So I don't know. I'm struggling with the word of value, because when he's on the mound, he's elite, but he's not often on the mound. And we know that typically the best, you know, the best trade of players availability. And that really hasn't been the case with Volpe. I mean, I'm reading Volpe on a spreadsheet. I don't know what I'm doing with Severino. Same team, different player, obviously. So with Luis Severino. So I don't know. I'm pretty out on him at this point, just because the health matters and he's just can't stay healthy.
Yeah, the whole Yankees rotation is having a hard time. Outside of Garrett Cole, it's like, all right, you had the issue. Cortez had the issue earlier in the spring. Obviously, he's back now and should be fine to start the season. Then you had, obviously, Montas out for a while. Rodon with the strained forearm. Now Severino with the strained lats. So look at 3/5 of the rotation's down. Then you insert Clark Schmidt, Domingo Herman, and I'm not even sure who will be the other guy now. Ross Richo has Johnny Brito for whatever that's worth. Who knows? Who will actually
be? He just trolled a gym today, by the way. 5.1 perfect innings.
Oh, today he did? I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it just happened.
All right. Pushing strong for that fifth spot. He's a little motivated now with the potential rotation spot open for at least the start of the year. I still think they go and trade for some pitching. You know, I still think that you could see either like Peraza, not Volpe, but one of maybe Peraza or Gleyber Torres dealt for some pitching. Not necessarily right away, but if the Sevi or the Rodon injuries kind of linger a little bit longer than anticipated, and you see them start to falter and have some tough time in the rotation, I can see them trading one of those two guys for pitching. Maybe they look at Cleveland. Maybe look at your Braves, Chris. Who knows who it could be. But I think you could see that become an option here at some point. All right, moving over to the risers now. We got several fun names here to close out the show. Let's start with someone from my Red Sox, Masataka Yoshida, who, you know, I think everyone liked Yoshida coming over. I don't think everyone was kind of low on him, but I think the questions were, how much upside is there? Like, we knew the approach and the bat-to-ball skills were phenomenal coming over from Japan, but outside of that, like, how much power and speed? Is he another Verdugo type? And I was on that, kind of in that camp as well. I thought he was maybe a little better than Verdugo, but, you know, the performance this spring overall and just, like, the reports and all everybody you hear talk to in Red Sox camp has just been head over heels glowing about this guy. Where I still think he's like a 25 homer bat, but you know, maybe he's a guy that pushes 20 home run, Chris, and maybe he's a little bit better than we anticipated coming over. So I think he's a guy that's at least someone on the rise right now.
Yeah, there's been some impressive exit velocities from him this spring, even the WBC. He just looked at home in the WBC and like just dominated, and hopefully that translates to his performance here. I do think I was a bit light on the power. I really didn't see that from him, but consistently lifting the ball, he said hitting the ball hard. I think 20 is a reasonable expectation. I think 20 home runs, 5 stolen bases, but the contact skills are so good that he could hit 300. The OBP skills are really good too. He could have a 380 OBP. So I do think I was a bit light on my Masataka Yoshida projection, but it's hard. It's hard to know how these players translate, and I just think he's going to be really solid. Not flashy, not a fantasy stud, but Yoshida's just going to be really good, I think.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a great way to kind of put it. And I think you could say that you kind of use that same terminology for this next guy too, Brendan Donovan. from St. Louis, a guy that I believe you wrote up earlier this spring, Chris, in one of your Dynasty Notes articles on your Discord, on your Substack. And Ilkka Donovan, another one of those guys that, you know, in St. Louis, we talk about how many names they have there. But Donovan's a name that I think is going to be playing every day, primarily at, you know, probably at second base, but he can move around a bit and play some short, some third, maybe even some outfield. I don't know. But I got to hit 281 last year, 394 OBP, over 468 plate appearances, 12.8% walk rate, 15% K rate. So like the approach, contact skills are all there. 90.4% zone contact, 15.6% whiff rate, 21% chase rate. Like everything about the approach, contact approach, it's all very, very good. But, you know, it's like, all right, what does he provide power and speed wise? This is only 5 home runs, 2 steals last year and 45 RBI. So wasn't really impactful in other areas, but added some weight this year. So another one that I think could be a decent riser. And I think you're even higher on him than I am.
Yeah, so it starts with a couple things. He got fitted for a new bat this offseason. And that's been a really big thing within the Cardinals, or I guess just bat fitting. And he did it this offseason. He changed his approach and stance a bit, and it's really paid off. I mean, we saw the lack of power last year where he hit, 5 home runs over 468 plate appearances. He's had 4 this spring in, 57 plate appearances. High OBP, like I think the power's developing. It's important to remember, he finished 3rd in Rookie of the Year voting last year, like really under the radar season. He was really good. And yeah. So I think that Donovan could be in for a breakout. He's kind of just a sneaky, quiet player who's just going to be really good in OBP league, but also really solid in the average league as well. So
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I do think that Brendan Donovan is a great player to have on your teams because he has eligibility right now all over the board from second, outfield, and third, I'm pretty sure. Maybe even more in some leagues. So I don't know. I'm really intrigued by the changes he's made. Normally, the spring training stats don't matter a ton, but they matter when you've made a change and we see the results from it. So Donovan, already a good player, not a great fantasy player, but a good player. And he's kind of transforming to where I think he can be a good fantasy player too.
I feel like he could be close in overall value to like a Jeff McNeil.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that range. Very underrated. But hey, end of the year, like you got a good average. You got a solid OBP. You know, McNeil's had some years where he was like 15, 18 home runs. I think Donovan could pick it up in that range. I don't think 20 plus, but hopefully having at least some power impact, and you know, probably only adds a handful of steals, but given probably some multi-position eligibility as well, that's going to have some kind of like the sum of the parts provide the value, not any one part specifically. Also, well, average could be, and same with OBP. But yeah, I think he's a very good bat that's going to be pretty underrated, and I think he still is underrated. And a good, you know, good target in redraft if you're still drafting, a good, you know, value target in dynasty leagues as well, because of that suppressed kind of lower price tag. Moving to some even younger names here, Gabriel Moreno has had a very, very good spring, finally hitting for power. Like that was just like the X factor that you and I have talked about for the last couple of years on this show, where everyone knew the contact skills were elite, that this could be a 300 hitter, like legit 300 type of hitter, one of the better pure hitters in the minor leagues that had shown some, you know, raw power potential, but it's hit the ball into the ground so often. But he's up to, what is he up to this year for this spring? For home, I think up to 4 home runs. I can't remember where I just put my number here. No, 3 home runs in 9 games with a double as well, hitting the ball really hard. 3 walks for 3 strikeouts, hitting .417 with a .500 OBP, .833 slug. And Carson Kelly, surprise, surprise, hurt once again, who actually was having a pretty decent spring in his own right. But I think you're going to see a lot of Moreno this year. And I think you could see a guy that is kind of solidifying himself as a top 10 fantasy catcher by the end of the season.
You can see it. I mean, the playing time is going to be there now, which is a huge value boost to him. So the contact skills are elite. He's shown the ability to hit the ball hard in the past, but now he's kind of taking it to the next level of lifting it a bit more and also showing some consistent hard hit balls. Like the EVs have been really good this spring for Gabriel Moreno. I'm thinking that you're right. I think he could be a top 10 catcher pretty quickly. And I'm jumping on board. He's young. He just does everything you want him to do. And the bat's just so good. So I think he's going to get 400 to 450 plate appearances this year. And they're going to be really good at that. So I'm pretty all in on Moreno because of the cost. He's affordable, and it's rare to get that kind of batting average out of a catcher. And I think the power's coming too. So, yeah, sign me up.
We haven't done a game of who would you rather have in a little bit here. So let's throw a game of that in right now, Chris. Put you on the spotlight, or on the hot seat, I should say. Long-term dynasty, who's going to be better, Gabriel Moreno or MJ Melendez?
It depends on what you want, I guess. Like, that's a cop-out answer. I think Melendez just has more juice for fantasy production. And if it's an OBP league, I'm going Melendez. But if it's an average league, I'm going Moreno.
That's fair. Moreno or Andy Rodriguez?
I'm actually going to take Moreno. I really do believe in... I think Moreno's got a slight edge in hit tool, even though Indy's a really good hit tool as well. And as much as I love Indy, I'm not super in on his power. Like, his numbers were just, he kind of outperformed what data suggests that he should have done. So there may be a little power regression with Andy Rodriguez. So I'm going to take Moreno, but it's close.
All right. Moreno or Logan Ohapi?
I'll take Moreno there too.
All right, let's make this a little harder here. Let's go Moreno or Francisco Alvarez.
I feel weird to even be considering this. I feel like it should be easy Alvarez, but I have concerns that Alvarez is like a 240 hitter. And is the power gap enough to, like, is Alvarez going to hit for that much more power to overcome that batting average difference? And that's what I'm kind of questioning here. I think I'm still going to lean Alvarez right now, but it's not like overwhelming like it could have been.
All right, I think we're getting into that range. We start switching over from Moreno. One more just to check for you. Moreno or former Brave William Contreras?
I'm going to go with Contreras there.
Okay,
still.
Cool. That's what I thought. Okay, we reached the spot where I was like, all right, where is it? Where does it go over from Moreno answers to these other players? All right, we found the range for you, Chris. All right. Next, I think I'm pretty spot on with you on a lot of those. I think I would lean Hendy, but this is really close. All these guys are really close. I think this would be a big glob of like that tier two of catcher rankings. I don't think any of these guys necessarily get up to the, you know, where we value Adley right now or Will Smith or JT or even Kirk, but right in that tier two where it's like guys, you know, ranked like C5 through C10 or something like that. What a good names there. What a fun young catcher names for sure. Moreno. Finally, if the power sticks, that's a big thing. If this is all kind of a mirage and looking at 7 home runs this year to go along the high average, then yeah, he's probably in the next tier. He's probably in tier 3. But if he can just get 14, 15, something like that in the teens for home runs, that'd be huge when you get that 280 plus average that goes along with it. Over, I think he could even put over 500 player appearances this year. We'll see. But yeah, definitely Moreno is on the rise for sure. All right, a few more names here. One more hitter, Edward Julian, who is one of the, he's fun one to talk about because there's so much with the profile of Edward Julian to talk about where it's like, all right, obviously the approach is, or at least the patience is definitely there, but is he too patient? How much the raw power is solid, but how much can he get into in games? There's a lot of like, you know, what ifs with him. We know the talents there. Like this, he's already got 3 home runs this spring, only 1 walk, which is very odd for him. But hey, 3 home runs, can't fault with that. Looking like he start the year with Minnesota, but guy that could be up a little sooner than anticipated here. So, what have been your thoughts lately on Edward Julian?
He's putting up some numbers that are pretty hard to ignore at this point. And, you know, Julian had a great year last year. Already been optioned. I think he should be the everyday second baseman in Minnesota. I'm a little bit disappointed about that.
Right.
But he's almost seems to be reaching like new heights right now with what he did this spring. And, you know, he was impressive in the AFL. We saw him. It was weird. He was in the home run derby. Like, he didn't really stack up with the guys in the home run derby.
I know. Okay. That was like the weirdest inclusion. Like, all like these like mashers. And then it's like, oh, Edward Julian. Okay.
Yeah. Julian has great plate skills. Like, he's passive. I want to see him swing more than 35% that he did last year. It's a bit concerning. I just want to see him be a bit more aggressive. And I think if he is, then it'll really benefit him. Like, we're looking at it last year, he had a 25% K rate, 19% walk rate. That's awesome, but can we just put the bat on the ball a little more? And I think if he does, then we're looking at a pretty unique profile here. Like, few guys have the plate discipline that he does with the kind of power. And so I'm really buying into Julian here. And I think that he's one that should certainly be moving up. And I think he'll be in Minnesota sooner than later, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I definitely agree. They don't really have that long-term answer there, but I think he is the long-term second baseman there, and a guy that could have that impactful power. Is he going to be like a 30 home run hitter? No. But a guy, you know, low to mid-20s home runs with solid average, plenty of runs scored, and a high OBP, of course. So and even a little bit of speed. I think that's the part that doesn't get talked about. Is he a burner? No, but he did steal 34 bags in 2021, over 112 games, 19 this past year, and 113 games. I think he could be at least, you know, maybe a close double-digit steal guy early on in his career. This at least adds some sort of speed, you know, value to his overall profile. So, yeah, I definitely like Edward Julian a lot. He had a great showing out in the fall league, 400, 563, 686. Yes, 563 on base in 21 games because he walked 23 times. In 96 plate appearances, 5 home runs, 6 steals, probably was the fantasy MVP of the fall league for sure. Guy that was impressive all around. So moving over to, we have a few pitching names here to close up the show. Let's start with Graham Ashcraft of the Cincinnati Reds. Obviously, a lot of the attention has been on Hunter Greene and Nick Lodolo, deservedly so. But Graham Ashcraft here has had a pretty solid spring in his own right here as I go up the stats real quick. Graham Ashcraft is at a 2.60 ERA and 0.87 WHIP over his 5 starts and 17 and a third innings with a 25-2 strikeout to walk ratio. Although 3 of the 5 runs can be attributed to home runs, or no, excuse me, 2 home runs allowed in those 5 starts. I don't know. I think this stuff is solid, Chris, but I don't know. Like, everyone's kind of going crazy over Ashcraft right now. I don't know if I see it. I don't know. What are your thoughts on Ashcraft?
I think he was pretty close last year. I think that there were a couple things that held him back from really taking off. And I'm kind of wondering if he corrected that. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm confident that he's going to be really good. Stuff's good. Like, there's no denying that. And the cutter had a couple issues where it dropped a little bit. It almost like dropped on the hitter's bats. And that's not what a cutter's really supposed to do, but he would like drop it in. And so it looks better. Like it's looked much improved. And yeah, if that's the case, I'm not saying he's going to be like a high end starter or anything, but I do actually believe that he's going to be a solid mid rotation guy. I think the strikeouts could tick up. I think that the ratios could be good. So with Graham Ashcraft, it's like, okay, like, is he going to be the third guy behind Lodolo and Greene? It looks possible. Yeah, yeah. I've bought him everywhere this offseason because the cost is so low that it's worth a shot to just see where it takes me, I think. And, you know, if he falters, who cares? Because I didn't invest that much. But I think this is it's a player that you want to get in on and at least see. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and that's a good point with the cost being so low. I think he could be solid. Like, I think there's like a solid back-end SP3, high-end SP4 profile here. If he can start missing bats more, and he has this spring, I'll give that to him. But last year, He's like, zone contact was 88% allowed. Whiff rate was below 19%. You know, got some around 55%. That definitely helps pitching in Great American Ballpark. But yeah, you look at the heat map on the cutter, it was not great. Over the heart of the plate too much. Also goes, you know, sinker and slider. And but the slider even was, you know, 32% whiff rate. That was his biggest whiff rate pitch. He couldn't really miss bats with the sinker or the cutter. And that's not uncommon. Those aren't usually, the cutter can be right movement profile and location, but sinkers aren't really a big whiff rate offering. Even cutters are on the lower end of the kind of whiff rate spectrum here. So I think there's a decent pitcher to be had here, and the opportunity will definitely be there. Looking at the rest of the rotation, it's Green, Lodolo, Ashcraft, and then it's like, I don't know, Connor Overton, Luis Sessa, this like guys that are just filling in until some prospects can come up over the next year or two. Not anybody of note there. So definitely will have all the opportunity to make a full, you know, 30 plus starts this year. So yeah, definitely I would like him in a better, in a different ballpark, but although you say the same about Green and Lodolo, but yeah, I think there's something here. I won't go crazy. Definitely, like you mentioned, Chris, price is very low. So definitely worth a shot here because the risk is just super low in acquiring him right now. Last two names on the list, Jeffrey Springs and Reed Detmers, both having Jeffrey Springs having a good spring. A lot of too many springs in that sentence there. Same with Detmers, whose velocity is up on his fastball. The slider velocity has been ticking up ever since, you know, middle of last year. Kind of went from more of a sweeper slider to a gyro slider. And that velocity is up even more after it being up near the end of last year as well. And then we were talking before we came on the air about how good Springs has been this spring. Look at his overall line, 14 innings, 5 at 0 runs, 0 home runs allowed, obviously, 2 walks and 24 strikeouts. So absolutely dominating the spring with him. Detmers, Chris, you got to invest in one of these two right now. Who are you investing in, Springs or Detmers?
Probably Detmers, just... I think the age factor there is what kind of gets me in on him. I mean, Detmers is, what, 23? Yeah, he's 23 years old. He won't turn 24 until midseason. I think there's a lot more to Detmers than we've seen. And Springs, on the other hand, is like a 30-year-old breakout who, while I love him, like I really like what he's done, I'll take the 7-year age gap here because I'm not sure they're that dissimilar of pitchers. You know, Springs had a phenomenal year last year, but I would take Detmers long-term in Dynasty, so I like both, but I'm going to pick Detmers if I had to pick one right now.
Do you think this breakout for Springs is legit? You think it's something where we could be looking, you know, a few years from now, and Springs is still a really good arm? Like, do you think Springs is legit in general?
I think so, to an extent. I really do think he's going to be fine for, like, a really good arm for the foreseeable future, and it's crazy to say, I like Springs a lot, and there's nothing in his profile that I'm like, oh man, like I got to get out like right now on him. No, I think that he's going to throw 150 really good innings this year. I think a mid-3s ERA is a likely outcome. He's not going to have a 2.46 ERA again, but Springs could sit somewhere in that mid-3s range and, you know, K per inning, low walk rate. I'm definitely liking that.
Yeah, I'd like to see him miss more bats with that slider. It's kind of weird. Never really been a big whiff rate guy on the slider, but the changeup's been pretty good last couple of years, both in terms of, you know, limiting hard contact and generating whiffs. 38.1% whiff rate last year on that, 229 batting average against, 320 slug, and a 255 wOBA. So yeah, I think Springs is what he is. I think what he showed last year, maybe not last year, 240, I don't think he's a 246 ERA guy, but, you know, 3.2, 3.3, 3.4 ERA, and, you know, 25-26% K rate. I think he's a guy that could be a good, like, fantasy SP3-4 type for the next handful of years. I think that's definitely legit. And with Detmers, you know, we saw him, again, start to really improve last year. It's kind of a weird year for Detmers. A lot of good starts, but a lot of duds in there as well, kind of suppress the overall line. But 3.77 ERA overall, I think there's a 26-27% K rate guy. And here, especially with the kind of new velocity gains he's made, both the four-seamer and the slider, you can get that slider missing even more bats. Like last year, it was decent, 222 batting average against, 327 slug, but only a 28.7% rate. Out of his four pitches, they're all under 30%, but he had slider and the curveball both, you know, right at 30%, right below it. So if you just get him to miss more bats with that new look slider and the added velocity, I think you would definitely see him take that next step this year. So I'm in on both. I think they're both good buys right now in dynasty leagues, but yeah, the age gap plays into this. So I would definitely be more willing to buy a Reed Detmers. But again, I think they're both pretty good value buys right now, though the hype on Detmers is starting to climb. So that might, that might close soon. All right. That is going to wrap up the show today, though. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Our next episode will be on Thursday on opening day. Super fun time of year. Hope you all had a great draft season, and best of luck to you in all of your leagues this year, unless you play in a league with Chris and I, of course. Joking a little bit here. Join us again on Thursday for more fantasy baseball talk. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.